From 90.7 WFAE and the Lynx Blue Line, this is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Please board this first Lynx Blue Line train. We'll be leaving here shortly.
Yesterday morning, they cut the ribbon on the Lynx Blue Line, and the first train pulled out of the Transit Center station on Trade Street with CAT CEO Ron Tober at the controls. We were aboard that train to talk to many of those responsible for taking light rail in Charlotte from the drawing board to the track. So today's program comes to you from that first train as it rolled down the rails and back. For transit supporters, it was a day of celebration marked by appearances and speeches by several dignitaries, among them Senator Elizabeth Dole.
It really is helping Charlotte to move into the future now. And as a member of the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs Committee, it's been my privilege to be able to help get that full federal funding of $192 million for this project.
She also surprised a few people with an announcement.
We were able to get in a conference report just a few days ago $4.75 million for the Northeast Corridor.
Great news.
Senator Richard Burr had praise for city leaders who maintained their vision in the face of opposition.
This was not a consensus project. There were its detractors. But many in the realm of leadership understood that there was a vision for the future. 2025, I think, was the goal that was set. And that we've got to be as concerned about the next generation as we are our own generation.
The next stop will be 3rd Street and Convention Center Station.
Finally, the gathered crowd got to board the train for that inaugural ride. And as we rode, we spent time talking to those on board about the train and its impact on Charlotte. Later, we'll hear from the mayor, Ron Tober, and the deputy administrator for the Federal Transportation Administration. But first, we asked WFAE Scott Graff to ride the rails with assistant city manager Jim Schumacher to talk about the development we've already witnessed along the line.
Well, I think there's a lot out there watching what happens, but there's also a lot that are already doing things. Over these last years, as the project has evolved and got under construction, the land values along the corridor have been going up. A lot of the land's been changing hands, moving to developers, and so a lot of what we see happening today is the older projects, the older buildings that have been here for decades are coming down and making way for new residential projects.
At what stage would you say that most of these projects that have been underway in coordination with the light rail line are at this point?
Well, they've been underway during the construction of the light rail project and have coordinated their design so that the projects literally front along the edge of the corridor. So some folks can walk out the front door of their townhouse and be on the corridor. And there is a bike and pedestrian trail that parallels the tracks here, so folks can get out and use that for recreation or for going a short distance or jump on the train to go a longer distance.
Some are finished already?
Yes, some of the projects have been finished. Some of them actually began during the time of the trolley. You know, we started operating the trolley a few years ago, and some of the development activity was actually occurring during that phase.
Describe for the listener the nature of some of these projects. We're driving by right now a very open site that still is yet not to have anything on it other than a crane and a lot of construction workers this morning, but there's obviously residential, commercial, and some office space. Is there one more prevalent than others?
Right, most of it's residential. The units often are mixed use in that they'll have some retail space on the ground level, but they're mostly residential projects. That was a project called the Ashton that we just passed at Tremont Avenue, I believe 11 stories high. Most of the projects are in the, what you might call mid-rise, three, four, five, six stories high. A lot of residential, a lot of apartments. A lot of the units along the corridor are going to be for rent units, which is a good situation for us. We've had a lot of condominium development in the center city, but we need a mixture. We need a lot of apartments as well, and we're seeing that along the corridor.
And we've heard oftentimes in discussions about light rail that this is a way to fill in the population, if you will, and increase Charlotte's density, and I suppose that would be direct proof right there.
Oh, that's absolutely right. That's really what this is about. The train is very exciting and a very significant event for Charlotte. But what it's really about is creating corridors in our city where growth can occur. Our population is going to go up another 50% over the next couple of decades. And those folks need a place to live, a place to work, a place to go to the grocery store, the theater. And we don't want them all to move to the surrounding counties. Some of them will. But what this is about is capturing some of that growth inside Charlotte and bringing that vitality and that prosperity and economic life back to the center parts of our city and along these corridors.
Now, we're south of Tremont, and we've seen already a lot of open area right now. We just passed an open grassy area where ground hasn't been broken yet. This is 2007. If we're back here in 2012 and take this train ride, how different is it going to look?
Oh, it'll be much different. I think you'll see many of these buildings gone. Right here, we're right at the Pepsi station, the Pepsi factory, and a portion of this factory is going to be converted to a residential project here at the New Bern station. Right across the track on the west side, there used to be an asphalt plant, and that asphalt plant has been removed, and that site is going to be replaced with new development, apartments and residential, again with some commercial space, restaurant space. The pedestrian and bicycle trail that parallels the tracks, I think you'll see a steady stream of people using that trail and to get between the south end and downtown, using it to get to a destination or just using it to get out and enjoy the Charlotte weather.
Now, we're seeing areas along that are butting up against the light rail line here, but obviously this is going to impact life, not just up against the light rail line. How far back will life be different for folks who are living in these areas that haven't had a lot of development recently, and how will the life be different there?
Well, I think you'll see the development happening a few blocks off of the corridor, off of the rail corridor in both directions. But it also impacts the existing neighborhoods, even where you don't have the new development. Those existing neighborhoods, many single-family neighborhoods, cul-de-sac neighborhoods, those people now have the opportunity to get to the corridor and get on the train and get downtown or get to where they need to go. As part of the initiative by the city, we've put a lot of investment in not just the train and its tracks, but sidewalks, improved streetscapes along the South Boulevard corridor, bikeways, bike lanes, pedestrian bridges and pedestrian improvements at the intersections, a lot of investment that makes it possible and more friendly for those pedestrians to get from their neighborhoods over to the corridor and get on the train and get where they need to go.
You're listening to Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins on 90.7 WFAE. I'm Scott Graff, having a conversation on the Blue Line today, the opening day of Charlotte's first ever light rail line, with Assistant City Manager Jim Schumacher. And Mr. Schumacher, we're talking about life backing off of the light rail a couple of blocks. You talk about those homeowners. They'll have a new way to work if they work uptown or anywhere along the line. What are their property values doing?
Well, the property values, I think, are going to go up along the corridor. The land directly adjacent to the corridor over these last 7 years or so has already appreciated substantially. As the development occurs, we find that the tax basis, the tax value in the land, goes up 10 to 15 times. So where the city and the county have been getting property taxes of $1 in these past decades, you know, that's going to go up to $10 or $15. In its place. So that's a significant benefit for our community in terms of funding our other public needs, funding the our road construction and public safety activities of the city, and in the case of the county, our school system. So our local government and our local way of life benefits not just from having a new way to get around, but from the development that we're capturing along this corridor.
You mentioned earlier that when the trolley line was put in, that spurred some economic development. A lot of it has come along since the light rail was announced. What percentage, if you can stab at it, would be here or wouldn't be here if the light rail wasn't put in and this was just a trolley line?
Well, to guess a percentage would be just that, a guess. But what I would point out is the history of transportation and land use. You know, you can look back thousands of years and understand that land use and where people want to live and commerce occurs along transportation corridors. You go back to when people were traveling boats on the oceans and then boats on the rivers, and then when the trains started going across our country, that's where development occurred and that's where cities grew, the intersection of those transportation corridors. And what we're doing here is recreating a transportation corridor, really adding to the vehicles, the cars that can use South Boulevard and I-77. There's now also the option of using the light rail train along this corridor. And that really sets the basis for commerce and residential and leisure and just the activity of living and being a city to occur in this corridor.
I would imagine this appeals to a lot of young people. Is there a target demographic, these developers moving in, the businesses they'll be putting in these mixed-use areas, are they going to cater to a younger demographic as opposed to, say, folks who are retirement age?
Well, I think it's interesting, and you mentioned it there at the end. I think there's two demographics at least. It's the younger single professionals and folks who like to get out and get about a lot. But there's also the baby boomer generation who are finding that they're tired of mowing the lawn on the cul-de-sac and they'd like to live somewhere where they can have mobility without having to fight the traffic or figure out where to park their car, take the train to a show downtown. So there's really those two demographics at least.
We still don't know how many people are going to be riding the light rail line. With how much certainty can you say that these developers are making a good investment of their money?
Well, I think we're going to see that in the coming weeks and the coming months when we see how much people use the train. I'm confident that they are going to use the train. And I think that the developers that have already shown that confidence are really making the ball roll down the hill. The other developers that are taking a wait-and-see attitude, they'll see that it's going to work. Developers sometimes can be cautious and conservative, and they want to see something on the ground. And as of today, we have this train and its track on the ground, and you can clearly see that it's here. It's going to operate and move people along the corridor. And so the developers that have been taking a wait and see, I think they're now going to say, okay, I do see it, and I'm ready to take some action.
Now, we just went past the New Bern area, and we have turned back around, and we're back headed north toward the center city. So we didn't go very far. We have seen a lot here in the South End and the Dilworth area, a lot of development. If we were to continue out to 485, how much development would we see out there?
There are some projects out along the corridor on towards Pineville, towards 485, that are under design. I think there's a lot of land out that way, and so we'll see projects on out the corridor just as we're seeing them here closer in the South End area.
But right now it's very South End heavy.
That's right. The development, the momentum has been here in the South End, and partly attributed to the trolley. The trolley operated here in the South End and to the center city, and so that's where the momentum has been. But as the train begins operating on out to 485, I think we'll see it spread.
Assistant City Manager Jim Schumacher, thanks for your time.
Very welcome.
When we come back, Mayor Pat McCrory and others join us for the ride. First, some comments from some bystanders.
Other cities I've lived in, it's always great to have some kind of commuter transportation, especially rail system. It's always a great alternative, so I think it's a great thing.
I think it's like ridiculous to even have it because it doesn't serve the whole city.
I think it's definitely good for development for the Charlotte area. It's something that it needs to keep it contender in the ever-changing marketplace of the country.
Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE.
Third Street and Convention Center Station.
And we are on the train. It's moving. It's a watershed moment. And we're with Mayor Pat McCrory. Big, big day for you and for the city, I take it.
Well, it's a great day for Charlotte's future. And that's really why we're doing this. It's for the future. But I've got a big smile on my face along with many others. I'm reminded of an old rock group that I used to enjoy, Blood, Sweat, and Tears.
Yeah.
And we've sweat a lot of political blood and over this, and now it's almost an emotional moment for many of us.
Well, you know, there were a lot of naysayers right up to the very end of this project, and as an ardent supporter, how long do you think it'll be before your side is proven right?
I think there will always be naysayers, and it makes us work harder to make us explain what the future holds. And one of the criticisms I think that's fair directed toward me is after we passed the 1998 referendum, we needed to improve the communications. 30,000 new people were coming to Charlotte every year, And I think the lesson learned from this last referendum is just because we won, we can't stop communicating and explaining to people that you have to prepare for the future.
Well, you said something this morning in your speech before we all got on board the train about Jesse Helms, Senator Jesse Helms providing the funding, the initial funding.
The initial funding.
That should say something to people who were not in favor of this.
Actually, my very first meeting with Senator Jesse Helms when I was mayor, I brought him up to the mayor's office and showed him our 25-year transportation plan. And he said, you know, I grew up in the Monroe area, and look how much it's changed since then. It's going to only change more. You better preserve those corridors now. And it surprised me. But he and his staff were our initial supporters to get the federal funding.
How should we measure the success of this Lynx Blue Line train, whether it just stays in this area or extends itself to UNC Charlotte, whether there's a commuter line to Huntersville? How should we measure success? Is it more of a development tool, or is it a transportation tool, or what?
It's a combination of everything. It's a part of land use planning and transportation, because you can't have one without the other. When you build a road, you impact how you develop as a community, and you do the same thing with transit. So it's a combination of transportation and land use planning, and if you don't have both, neither one will work.
I'm sure that this is not the first time you have ridden this train on this ribbon-cutting day. But what are your first impressions? What were your first impressions when you got on board and went past all the development up and down this line?
Well, first off, I was amazed how quiet the train was.
You can't hear it. We're very disappointed. It's a radio show, and we're moving, and you can't hear
it. There's no boop, 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 you know, like the Bee Gees song, Jive Talking. There's no movement. I mean, it's very smooth and comfortable. But what it shows you, we got to remember, the South Corridor was a dead corridor for the last 20 years. It was blighted. There were some great neighborhoods, but they were declining. And frankly, the vision of this transit helped revitalize the whole South End, and now it's moving on to Woodlawn, Tivola, and other interchanges all the way to Pineville.
I was talking to Michael Smith, who's the president of the Charlotte Center City Partners, a moment ago, and he said, you know, this is a, we all know this is a watershed day, but he said, this is the day, it's very few days in your life that you live through that you know that time will be measured by the time before this train opened and the time after this train opened. If it stops with just this one line, will it have the same impact?
No,
will that be a mistake?
I think you've got to have a connection. And I hope, you know, already Senator Dole and Senator Burr and the FTA administrator mentioned to us to get funding to plan the northeast line up toward UNC Charlotte. I mean, in the future, long after I'm gone, I hope this train, you'll be able to ride this all the way to the UNCC campus.
We started this interview at 7th Street, and we are now crossing 277. You just said, when you're gone. You're never going to be gone. This is 12 years as mayor. But there are rumors that you are going to be running for governor, or certainly considering a run. If you were to go to Raleigh, would you be pushing for more money for roads or more money for mass transit and trains?
It's a combination of both. And it's just not roads and trains. It's bicycle paths, it's sidewalks, it's pedestrian-friendly access, it's design. And if you don't design the roads and the trains and the bicycle paths the right way to begin with, you're wasting your infrastructure money. And that's where I think we have failed, some in the local level and at the state level, where we've built roads and we've even built rail lines maybe without thinking about the design and anticipating the future growth. You know, the Outer Beltway is a perfect example of that around the Pineville interchange. We built an interchange with 5 years growth anticipated as opposed to the next 100 years.
Right.
And that's where we got to think of the next 100 years.
What of those people who were not in favor of this? What did you see about this project that they have not yet seen or cannot see?
I think I saw the future. Listen, I look outside the mayor's office and see how much the city's changed just in the past decade. And you have to have a vision on how we're going to look 30 years from now, because 30 years in the life of a city is a very short period of time. And that's the hard sell. You know, Bill Lee, I go back to one of my mentors with Duke Power Company. He and I had a conversation about 4 weeks before he died. And he and I agreed you can wait until the pain arrives and do it then. And it'll probably be an easy sell, but it'll probably be too late and it'll be too expensive. Or you can anticipate the pain and change now. And that's what we're doing, is we're anticipating the pain, but it's a hard sell. It is a very hard sell, and we had to sell it again this past election.
Right after the voters overwhelmingly reapproved the half-cent sales tax for transit, the people in Huntersville and up north, Mooresville, announced that they really didn't think that they wanted this. What would you say to them about light rail coming to their community, or commuter rail coming to their communities?
I would recommend that they look at the growth they've had in the last 20 years. I mean, 30 years ago when I moved to Charlotte, it would take 15 minutes to get to Mooresville during rush hour. Now, it'll take an hour and 20 minutes. It's a very tough ride during rush hour. And they better look another 30 years from now and prepare for the future.
I haven't seen any of public art as we ride the train yet, but I have seen it as I've been in my car, particularly those orange discs on South Boulevard that cost $1.9 million. Who paid for all of that art, and why is it part of this package?
There's a policy of 1%, which pays for public art. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's the way the policy is at this point in time. And the good news is some of the real bad art was taken out due to budget overruns, and I'm proud that we took. God, if you thought that was controversial, you should have seen the stuff that was taken out. And I'm glad it was. But you know, I'll tell you the one good thing about some of the public art is some of the pavement strips and landscaping that have yet to be put in because of the drought. There's going to be beautiful landscaping along the South Corridor here.
It is changing the face of the city. Mayor Pat McCrory, congratulations on a very exciting day for you, I know, and thank you for taking the time to talk to us on this train.
Thank you very much.
We're still on the train. The train is still rolling, and we're with Ron Tober, the CEO of CATS. Are you tingling with excitement today? You got to be very, very happy.
I'm very happy and very pleased, very proud, too.
You are the guy who drove the train right out of the station. You're the first guy to drive it with people on board. That thing is packed to the gills here.
I know.
Was it a scary experience for you?
Well, no, it wasn't.
People on this train.
I know. It was an exciting experience. My staff had gotten me well prepared and given me good training, and it wasn't very far, so I didn't have too far to go. But I will be riding coming on the way back.
Well, you know, you've been planning this for so very, very long and working on it. And there were moments when it didn't look like it was going to happen. And there have been some very tense moments with money and things like that. Is this everything that you thought it would be now that it's up and running? Or are there things about this experience that you couldn't have and did not anticipate? The experience of being on the train I'm talking about, not the cost overruns.
No, actually, I think we've been able to get into the line pretty much everything that we felt was essential to having a good experience for the public, all the security features, some of the public art, and so on. So there's nothing here that I think is less than what we would like. There are some sections of the line that we would have liked to have had elevated, a few other things, but from a riding perspective for the public, it's the way it should be.
We're in the South Boulevard corridor right now, and coming up close to Remount Road, I suppose, is that where we are on this continuous trip. This is going to be a new experience for pedestrians and for drivers in this city as this train starts to make its daily trips up and down this line. There's already been one death as a result of the train, somebody sitting on the tracks. It takes a long time to stop a train. When it's empty, it takes a longer time to stop it when it's full. So what would you say to Charlottesians now that these trains are traveling once these trains start traveling every 7.5 to 30 minutes? What will you say to them about for it?
They need to respect the fact that the trains are big vehicles, that they go very fast. They don't stop on a dime. People need to be careful and respect what the law says, which means you don't go around stop gates, you don't trespass on the tracks, you stay away from the right-of-way because it is a place where someone can get harmed.
Is everything done, or is there more to do along the route?
There is some things that, like landscaping, we have not gotten in because of the drought. We have some landscaping at some stations. We still need to put some more in. Some of the public art features are not in yet. The pedestrian connection over to the epicenter downtown is not in, won't be until February. And we get our debit credit capability that we want to get put in place on the ticket vending.
I was just going to ask you about that because I was surprised to find that the fare machines will take cash when they open on that Monday that you open the line, but they will not take debit or credit cards until sometime next year.
Why? Early January.
Why?
Well, it just took a lot longer to get it installed on these machines than we would have liked to have seen. There was coordination issues between the manufacturer of the machines, Wachovia, their clearinghouse that they have, and just getting everything put into place so that it's a secure operation from the public standpoint.
So now, how will you know if people have bought a ticket?
Because we're going to have fare inspectors and police officers patrolling the train, and they'll be asking people for proof of payment that they actually have.
Is that cheaper than turnstiles in the long run?
Much cheaper. Much cheaper to operate in the long run. Very much cheaper, because you have to pay for the maintenance and staffing of that kind of an operation.
So it's going to cost, what, $1.30 to ride? Is that correct?
Yes.
And it doesn't matter where you get on, it's $1.30. So if you get on at, I don't know, 5th Street and go to 7th Street, it's $1.30, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Why isn't it prorated?
Well, we don't have a zone fare structure. We wanted to keep it simple for the time being. Maybe someday in the future, change our fare collection.
So what should people know before they get on board this train and ride it for the very first time? What should they know for the before they ride it for the very first time?
Well, we've invested a lot of money in technology for security of the transit system, and we have an awful lot of features of the transit system that are designed to keep people safe and secure. There are cameras in all the park and ride lots, and cameras on the trains that can get make sure that people are in fact safe and secure.
Now, this train's going to run when it starts running for commuters. 5:30 a.m. to 1 a.m. weekdays, 6 a.m. to 1 a.m. on Saturday, 7 a.m. to midnight on Sunday. How often will the trains run, and how will people be able to figure
that out? In the rush hours on weekdays, they'll be running every 7.5 minutes, the middle of the day every 15, then the evenings that go 20 and 30 minutes, and on the weekends we'll start off running every 15 to 20 minutes and then see what kind of volume of passengers we get and whether or not we need to operate more frequently.
Dependability of this is going to be paramount because people are going to depend on it. What happens if there's a breakdown? What happens if there's an accident? Can other trains behind this one, for instance, get around it in some way?
No. Well, yes, they can. We can single track in some areas. We can also move a train out of the way. And if necessary, we can put buses in operation.
And this will be able to operate in snow and ice as well?
That's correct.
How?
Well, by keeping the snow off the rail, okay? We won't let the snow accumulate, and then we'll have a train that'll have ice cutters on it to keep the ice off of the wire.
And once the train starts running, you're going to redo some of the bus lines, are you not?
Right, that's
how
correct.
Do people find out about the bus that they've been taking that maybe just
they go to ridetransit.org or call 336-RIDE and talk to one of our telephone information people.
If you used to take the bus, will you be spending more to take the train?
No, the fare on the train is the same as it is on local buses.
And transfers from bus to train and back are free. You announced your retirement in December last summer, and your successor has already been chosen. Now that the train is up and running, and you've cut the ribbon, and you've driven the thing, and you're riding the tracks, any second thoughts? Any regrets?
No, with my wife in earshot of me right here, I made a promise to her a year ago that I would be retiring from this job after we're done, and so I made a promise to her, and that's what we're doing.
So you wouldn't like to be around in case they extend this to the university area or the commuter rail?
No, there's very capable people here, and City Manager Kurt Walton has hired a very capable individual to take the reins of CATS in the future.
We've never had a chance to talk to Mrs. Tober. Can I impose on you just to ask you one question? Is that all right with you? He's a hard worker, I take it. He's not home a lot, is he?
He comes home, he eats his supper, and he works till 11:30, Sunday night through Thursday night. So that answers that question.
So thank God he's retiring, right?
Yes. Now I'll finally have a husband.
Now, for those of you who deride public officials and people who work for city and county government, you heard it from the wife. She knows how much he works here. What's your biggest satisfaction, your biggest regret as you're about to retire here?
Well, I think the biggest satisfaction is getting this first line done, the way we said it was going to get done. And I'm very pleased at that. The staff has worked very hard. Our contractors and consultants have worked very hard. And I think, the biggest regret is that not trying to keep folks informed on what these projects take, all that's involved in them. They are very complex, difficult projects to put together. There's a lot of things that have to get done. We'll do a better job. I know CATS will do a better job in the future on that.
Well, Ron Tober, I'm proud to say that I was on the train when you drove it out of the station, and it was a smooth, comfortable ride.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining.
It was a pleasure to serve you.
The train continues to roll, and now we get to talk to Sherry Little, who spoke this morning at the ribbon-cutting ceremony. She is the deputy FTA administrator from Washington. How often do you take Metro in the D.C. area? I'm just curious about that. Do you take
every
it at all?
Every day, oh, yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
How does this compare?
It's different. The existing system in Washington, D.C. is a built-up system around a very urban environment. And the great thing about this particular system is that it's being built around a developing community. So you have the opportunity to really influence economic development and land use patterns around each of the stations.
Some people may be surprised to find that the Bush administration is pretty much behind this. You paid for half of the project.
That's right, $192 million.
And you just announced earlier today or earlier this week that more money is coming to extend the line to UNC Charlotte, or to do the study to extend the line to UNC Charlotte. Why is the administration behind this kind of a project?
Well, this project is one that met our criteria, and it met it and succeeded it. In fact, there are good land use and economic development plans already in place here. It was a cost-effective project that has the potential to carry a great number of passengers, and those are the kind of projects we're looking for at the federal level to fund.
Well, I know that there's probably a formula that the government uses to decide whether this is a good thing or a bad thing for a city, and we obviously made our case that this is a good thing for us, and yet there are still people here who continue to say that this is a boondoggle. What do you say to them?
I think those people can wait to see what the development that's going to create around the stations and what kind of ridership benefits are going to generate, because we have a very rigorous process for evaluating public transportation investments at the federal level, and we've seen that Charlotte has the right formula, which is why we were delighted to participate in the project.
How should we measure progress? How will you measure success on this project?
It's primarily about keeping ridership numbers high and creating economic development opportunities and developing land use patterns around the station that create a livable, walkable community for people in Charlotte. That's what we think is going to happen as a result of this investment.
Sherry Little is the deputy FTA administrator down here for the opening day of the Lynx Blue Line. I want to thank you for joining us. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE.
I hear the train coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when.
It's Charlotte Talks on board the Lynx Blue Line train. I'm Mike Collins on WFAE and WFHE. Among the people on board this inaugural run of the Lynx Blue Line were two members of the Mecklenburg County Commission, former chairperson Parks Helms, and current chairwoman Jennifer Roberts. I started our conversation by asking Parks Helms if he thought opening day would ever arrive.
You know, this is a culmination of about 15 years of work on the part of many, many people. I was here in the beginning, Mike, and, you know, this is not just about light rail. This is about the commitment of a community to be all that it can be and all that it should be. And Jennifer Roberts and I, on the part of the County Commission, have had a major role in helping this thing happen. I remember my day is going to Raleigh to the legislature to get them to give us the half-cent sales tax. Worked with Mayor Pat McCrory. He handled the Republicans, I handled the Democrats. And here we have created something by that collaboration, I think, that sets this community apart as one of the great American cities because of the way we see ourselves and the courage and confidence we have in the future.
Talk to me, Jennifer Roberts, if you would, about what this should mean to people in Mecklenburg County, this day, this train, and going forward from this point.
Well, I think it means that going forward, we are supporting our infrastructure. We know we have a lot of needs as we continue to grow, but we're willing to step up and provide options for people. We're willing to care about the environment by providing options that get people out of their cars. And we're also going to be connecting our university to the system. We're going to be connecting.
Hopefully. Maybe not.
Pretty soon. Well, all indications are pretty positive that way. And you know, other parts of the community, the other thing that's been so amazing is just the regional collaboration that's happened around this. We had both North Carolina senators here today at this opening. And the fact that we have so many mayors from the region, other commissioners, not just in Mecklenburg County, but around who've been watching this and caring about it, it means better collaboration going forward on a lot of things.
I want to hear your first impressions of riding this train.
Well, the first thing I thought about is that my kids are going to kill me because they didn't want me to ride it without them. They're not here today, but it's great.
One of the tangible effects of this train as you ride this rail line is this, to see the construction cranes. There must be 15 or 16 construction cranes along this route. That says this community is building, it's moving forward. There are so many advantages to having this rail in place. It's going to change for the better this community, for the next generation as well as this one.
Parks Helms. Mecklenburg County Manager Harry Jones echoed those comments when he spoke to WFAE's Scott Graff on the platform.
I mean, it's just a great day to be the county manager, you know, to be in the position I am, to see the growth that's occurring in this community, to see how the community comes together. It's just hard to describe this day. I'm just so appreciative that the citizens of this community would want to support an initiative such as this transit, to keeping our bus lines, and I'm just looking at all the development that's occurring, so it's got to be a good thing for the future of this community.
Just got done riding the line and got to see all of the open space where ground has been broken on various projects. What does the $1 billion plus in development that's proposed and being constructed right now mean to you as county manager? Somebody puts together a budget every year.
Well, it gives me the opportunity to look at what it's going to mean in terms of additional revenue that will come to this particular community as a result of the investment that we have made in this particular community. That means that we will be able to lessen our need for property tax on the homeowner, because we're bringing an additional revenue base and expanding the tax base, and that's always a good thing. When you have a mix of development between commercial and homeowner development, the homeowner, I think, ends up being the benefactor for something like that.
What does this do to quality of life for the folks along the line and within a several block radius of the line?
Well, I think that the mayor said it best this morning. It gives people choices.
It gave choices. And I'm convinced at this point in time, and I know many of you are too, that the community that has the most choices in the future, that has the most choices in housing, employment, and mobility, will be the community that survives with the greatest quality of life and clean environment for the future.
The line is up and running now. What, as county manager, do you start watching here over the next few months? What are going to be the things that you're really going to focus on?
I'm going to be focusing on the ridership, number one. And number two is to look at what might be the developer's new interest along the particular line. But primarily want to look at ridership on this line, then to look at the level of continued support for the bus system, and how the rerouting of the routes might affect the use of that.
Mecklenburg County Manager Harry Jones with WFAE's Scott Graff. Okay, how about some nuts and bolts? The Blue Line is 9.6 miles long with 15 stations and trains operating 7 days a week, beginning Monday, November 26th. It's the job of Rocky Piano to keep all of this running. He's the manager of rail operations for CATS, and we spoke to him on the platform at Bobcats Arena.
When a new project like this opens for the very first time, how do you, as a manager of operations, get up to speed on what you and those under you have to do? Because this is a first for you, too, isn't it?
Well, not for me personally, but for Charlotte it is. But when I first came here about 5 years ago, one of the things I needed to do was bring on a staff. We had to staff up. We were bringing on over 100 people. 100 people, basically some of them with experience, some of them without any rail experience at all. So one of the first tasks ahead was to find the proper staff to it could be able to operate and maintain this system.
How many trains in the fleet?
We have 16 rail cars.
16 cars. Now, the train that I'm looking at right now is one, two, three, four, five, six cars. Is that right?
No, actually, this is two cars coupled together.
Uh-huh.
And this is what we would call a two-car train.
Okay. So in morning and afternoon rush hour, when people are really riding this and it's coming every 7.5 minutes, is this the configuration for this?
Yes, we're going to be operating two-car trains similar to this and single-car units. In some cases, we're going to use single cars, like say in the midday or late in the evening when there's less ridership.
So what's capacity on a train?
Okay, per train, if we run a single-car train, each vehicle can accommodate up to 68, there's 68 seats on board, but we can accommodate up to 230 riders per car. So if we have a two-car train, that would be 460 riders.
So if it's full, how will people know whether they can get on or not?
Well, if it's full, they possibly would have to wait for the next train. I mean, it would be great to have a full train.
So it's like an elevator. You'll know when the doors open whether you can get on.
Yeah, the operators will be watching very closely to make sure that people can board safely.
Do trains and the tracks they run on require more or less maintenance than the buses that have been running for years?
In a way that they require more maintenance, because we don't know, besides maintaining the vehicles, the trains, we also have to maintain the track system, the power system, the stations, the signals, the train controls. So basically it's more maintenance intensive, because we have to maintain the entire system, not just the vehicles.
Now, there is an engineer, is that what you call him, in the front of the train, or an operator?
Well, actually, we call him an operator, a rail operator.
What is he doing? What does he actually have control over, the brakes?
He basically controls the propulsion system, which is how we accelerate the vehicles, and the braking system. He also operates the doors. He has a PA system where he can talk to the operators, keep them posted. And he also maintains communications with our control center. The control center is basically where they kind of watch over where all the trains are to make sure that they're running on time.
And they can actually, do they actually see the trains? Do they talk to the trains? Do they see the trains on some kind of a transponding device?
They have a large screen where they can monitor where trains are located on our entire system. Also, at every single station, we have cameras. So their control center can monitor when trains are coming in. They can also monitor crowds at a station. Say, for example, if we had a large number of people at the station, our control center would know that.
I just want you to know, listen to this. The train is moving and you cannot hear it.
Yeah, but the only thing you can hear is that background construction work going on. You can't hear the train.
I mean, you can barely feel the rumble in your feet on the platform. I read in the paper that there are 4 braking systems on each train: electric brakes, disc brakes, sand, and that's kind of old tech, isn't it?
Correct.
And electromagnetic brakes. What are all 4 systems for? How do you use them?
Well, normally, because the vehicles are operated on electricity, we try to use the dynamic brake first. Dynamic brake basically is a form of running the motors in reverse. Huh. Why that is useful is that basically it requires no disc wear. We also have friction brakes, similar to what's on an automobile, mm-hmm. but they have disc pads and they have wear. When we use our electric brakes, there's no wear, so that's our primary source of braking. The disc brakes or the friction brakes is what we use second. The electromagnetic, they're like large magnets. Mm-hmm. We use those basically only when we need to stop it very, very quickly in an emergency.
Now, you had to start this from ground zero. As you said, there were people who joined you in this division of CATS who have never had any experience with trains. How do you find engineers?
Well, some of our operators actually came from other systems. We were able to bring on a number of operators from San Diego. San Diego has had a light rail system up and operating for over 25 years. So it was good to find some operators from that system. We also basically had all of our trolley operators here, the trolleys that operated here, and we will be operating soon. We basically retrained all of them so they could operate one of our new light rail vehicles.
And I know that you've been up and running test runs back and forth testing the system, that the trains had to have X number of hours of I guess, rehearsal before you open
well,
the line.
To make sure that the trains would operate correctly, we had to run over 1,000 miles of track time.
And that gave operators a chance to...
And also gave our operators a chance to operate
going forward
and learn how to operate the vehicle.
Well, going forward, when this thing is up and running, how will new drivers get experience? I want to know?
No problem. A lot of the work is classroom work. They have to learn the rules of the road, so to speak. They also learn how to operate the vehicles in our yard, which is not on our main line, but not where our riders are. And then eventually, once they're fully trained sufficiently, that we bring them on the main line. They do not operate with passengers at that point in time. We operate them in between other trains. And there will also be an instructor on board with them to stop if need be.
I have a question that I've already asked somebody they didn't know the answer to. We're standing here facing the direction this train will go is from where we are now, which is at the Trade Street, to 7th Street. If I'm standing at a kiosk here, would I buy a ticket? Can I buy a ticket at this kiosk to go to Pineville?
That's correct. You could buy a ticket basically to ride on the entire system. It's considered to be a one-ride ticket. So mm-hmm. normally, if you're riding in one direction, like say for here, if you were heading south, you'd buy your ticket here, board the train.
And cross the platform.
Yes,
you'd have to
cross to the other side at this station and then ride all the way to 485. And you could, at 485, if you went out and did some shopping or whatever, got back on board again, you'd have to buy another ticket to ride back.
You expect a big turnout this weekend for the free rides?
we think we are going to get a huge turnout, and it's going to be very exciting and interesting for us to be able to accommodate crowds of people. But it's something that we've been looking forward to for, like, as we said earlier, about 5 years now. So
you're ready.
We're ready.
Rocky Piano, manager of Cats Rail Operations. Now, before we close Charlotte Talks today, even those who don't support light or commuter rail might agree with Charlotte Center City Partners President Michael Smith about the opening of Lynx being a watershed moment in Charlotte history.
This is one of those defining moments for Charlotte where everything will be measured before today and after today. It's a great experience. This is the kind of investment that our city needed to make. When you're welcoming 75,000 people per year to a region, you've got to have a strategic plan. You've got to find a way to accommodate all these new citizens. Mm-hmm. And it means new forms of transportation, new places to live, new looks at making sure we get the density to receive these families instead of concentric circles.
Well, now, you are from Chicago, and it just strikes me, we're standing on the platform which crosses Trade Street, so it's kind of like the L.
Exactly.
Here it's elevated.
This is our signature station. This canopy has light-emitting diodes in it. It's, as you can tell, it's a polymer that allows light to come through, so you can still see the beauty of our city. And at night, it will be very significant when it's lit up.
They
can put all the colors of the rainbow to it. So when the Bobcats are at home, they'll be able to light it up orange and black. When the Panthers are playing, the blue and black. It's going to be a very, very striking piece, and it will catch people's attention. It will highlight our transit system.
And you were telling me just after we got off the train, before we started talking on the radio, that isn't it nice to see the city from a different perspective? What did you mean by that?
Well, rails are built on the highest ground, and that's an infrastructure decision. And this is a part of our community that people have never experienced because you're never up on the rails. So you'll be really compelled the first time you ride this line where you're able to see our city from a different perspective. And you're able to really understand the amount of investment, institutional money that's coming into our city, offering that density we're looking for along the South Corridor.
Michael Smith, president of Charlotte Center City Partners. The Lynx Blue Line officially opens for business with a free weekend on Saturday, riding the rails free all weekend with kickoff celebrations planned on Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. The line begins regular daily operations Monday, November 26th at 5:30 in the morning with trains running each Monday through Friday morning and afternoon every 7.5 minutes. The complete trip from Pineville to 7th Street should take about 20 to 25 minutes and costs $1.30 each way. There are 3,500 free parking spaces for commuters at 7 park and ride lots from the starting point at I-485 and South Boulevard to the Scaly Bark station. For all the information you need to know about the train, its hours of operation, frequency, etc., you can go to charmec.org/departments/cats/links. For a special slideshow that you can enjoy of the inaugural trip that we just took on the Lynx Blue Line, you can find that at WFAE.org. Click on Charlotte Talks and then go to the audio slideshow link. Our thanks to Scott Graff and Lisa Miller from WFAE News for their participation in this special Charlotte Talks broadcast. And thanks also to Joby Sprinkle, Wendy Herkey, Tim Ross, and Aaron Sutton for helping everything run so smoothly. I'm Mike Collins.